Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Pensburg Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Bahana, and as always, alongside me, fellow Pensburg writer, Robbie Noggle. Robbie, how have you been since last week's episode?
Besides coming down with COVID, not too bad, Garrett, but feeling better than when I was a couple days ago and last weekend, so day to time, but other than that, doing pretty good.
Well, it's good to see that you're thankfully on the upswing from your bout from COVID. And thankfully, Robbie, the Penguins are here now that the Steelers are officially eliminated from postseason contention. I know a lot of focus is going to shift to the hockey team in Pittsburgh. And for those that may have not have been keeping a closer eye on the hockey team in Pittsburgh, the Penguins are doing pretty well for themselves right about now. As we always do at the start of a Pensburg podcast episode, we will start off with a recap segment of what the Penguins have been doing in their last stretch of games. And we'll start this recap segment this week with a look at the game that they played against the Los Angeles Kings on January 13th, 2022. And Robbie, a quick glance at this game. It was actually pretty close, at least looking at the box score, but the Los Angeles Kings would win this one by a score of 6-2, thanks to scoring four goals in the third period. A very uncharacteristic performance from the Penguins, seeing as they have been on quite a roll in recent weeks, racking up the wins and racking up the points. So Chris Letang actually gets the scoring going, his second goal of the campaign at the 4:42 mark of the first period. Pittsburgh out to a 1-0 lead over the Los Angeles Kings. However, Anze Kopitar would find the equalizer for Los Angeles at the 13:48 mark of the first period, and both teams would head into the intermission tied at 1. Into the second period, Los Angeles' veteran Dustin Brown gets his sixth tally of the season on the power play at the 14:32 mark of the second period. That would be all the scoring you'd see until we get into the third period where an explosion happens. However, Radim Zahorna would score his first goal of the season to tie the game up at 2 for both clubs just over 90 seconds into the third period. And this is where things started to take a downturn for the Penguins. Mikey Anderson would score his first goal of the season for the Kings at the 3:07 mark of the third period. The Kings would retake the lead, and they would not look back. as Victor Arvidsson would follow that up with his 9th goal of the season to make it a 2-goal difference between both clubs. Anze Kopitar would get his 2nd goal of the game to make it 5-2 Kings, and Sean Durzi would get his 2nd goal of the campaign at the 18:20 mark of the 3rd period, the final goal. Los Angeles wins 6-2. Robbie, there's not a lot you can take away from this game. You're going to have clunkers like this throughout an 82-game season. And while the Penguins did tie it up on the score sheet, at least, at the start of the 3rd period, you look at some of these statistics here in the box score. The Kings had 45 shots on goal to the Penguins' 29. The Kings win 59% of their faceoffs to the Penguins' 42. The Kings were 1-for-3 on their power play, only committed one penalty throughout the contest, had a couple more blocks. But overall, especially in the 3rd period, Robbie, it was pretty much domination from the Kings. And like I said, I don't read too much into this score. You're facing a Western Conference team where points obviously aren't as valuable as they possibly would be against a team like the Capitals, the Rangers, or the Hurricanes. So you're going to have a clunker like this from time to time. And for me, I just look at it as a game you just move on from. So I'll hand it over to you. What did you like, or in this case, probably dislike, from the Penguins' performance on January 13th?
I really like what you said there about it being a clunker, because that's probably the best way to describe a contest like that, especially from the Penguins' perspective. When they tied it, for as bad as they played, when they tied the game there early in the 3rd period, I kind of got like, man, maybe they can find a way to pull this out. They definitely don't deserve anything out of this. And then right after that, LA takes the lead again, and that kind of felt like any chance the Penguins had to come back was a race at that point, and Los Angeles took care of it from that point on. Like you said, scoring four unanswered goals, and in the third period to put a bow on it and get the win. But yeah, long road trip. You were coming off wins coming into that, and that's just how it rolls. It wasn't a blown third period lead, at least like it was in Dallas, but I mean, you got the win in Anaheim, so, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah, like you said, you're going to have games like that, and the Penguins had a game like that night, but that's just the kind of game you shake off and get ready for the next one, and don't worry too much about, because, I mean, LA is not a terrible team, they're not a great team, but the puck don't bounce your way sometimes. The Penguins always seem to have some trouble with the Kings and in LA anyway. So just shake it off and move it on to the next one.
Robbie, you mentioned there while you were dissecting the game that you thought at the point at which the Penguins tied, you thought that maybe that they were giving you a glimmer of hope to maybe get something out of this game. And while they didn't, they would move on to their next game. And as we get into looking at this game, some of that similar sentiment might carry over into the next game as well, as they did battle with the San Jose Sharks on January 15th. This was a game that the Penguins would win 2-1 in overtime. Rudolf Balcers actually gets the scoring going. He scores the only goal for the San Jose Sharks at the 7:01 mark of the first period. However, Chris Letang, continuing his goal-scoring threat from the previous game, he ties the game up for the Penguins just past the midway point of the first period. And that would be all the offense that both teams would muster until the overtime period, where 37 seconds into overtime, Jake Guentzel would score his 19th goal of the season thanks to a wonderful assist from Sidney Crosby. If you haven't seen this goal, I do implore Penguins fans to go just take a look at the skating ability of Sidney Crosby alone on this goal, as he sets up Jake Guentzel to get the game winner 37 seconds into overtime. So the Penguins get the extra point, Robbie. They leave San Jose with 2 points. But that sentiment, like I mentioned, that you were talking about, they really didn't deserve to take anything away from the Los Angeles Kings game. You could make the argument, Robbie, that they really didn't deserve to take anything away from the San Jose Sharks here. The Sharks leave with the loser point, but the Penguins emerge victorious. with only 27 shots on goal to San Jose's 41. The Penguins only win 33% of their faceoffs to San Jose's 67% of San Jose's faceoffs. The Sharks also go 0-for-4 on the power play. So the Sharks have more power play opportunities. That means the Penguins were committing more of the infractions than the Sharks did. The Sharks also outhit the Penguins 28-21, outblocked the Penguins 18-16. Robbie, this was more of the same as you kind of alluded to in that Kings game. They really didn't deserve it, but I will say, Robbie, good teams find ways to win, even if the stats don't back them up. And I think that's in large part. You look at the star power, 37 seconds into overtime. Jake Gensel is an all-star this year. Sidney Crosby doing his thing, setting up his line mate to get that winner in overtime and take the 2 points. So I'll hand it over to you, Robbie. What were your thoughts from the January 15th game against the San Jose Sharks?
This was the Luis Domingue statement game, we'll call it. 40 saves on 41 shots. Really the only reason the Penguins got 1 point, let alone two. Jake Gensel with the overtime goal, of course, to get that extra point on a beautiful set up by one Sidney Crosby. But the big story here was Luis Domingue. And coming out of this game, the big talking point was, did Domingue make a case for the backup role, the permanent backup role over Casey Smith? And I think, again, we talked about this the past two or three episodes. What can the Penguins do to improve at the trade deadline? And we said the one thing being Evgeny Malkin being already in the dressing room, don't even need to make a trade for that one. So what if maybe the Penguins now don't need to make a trade for a goal or a backup goaltender? Again, one start, so you don't want to put too much weight into it. But at the same time, Domingue, he's not like Maxime Legesse from last year with that one shutout at the end of the season. Domingue has a track record in the NHL. He played for the Tampa Bay Lightning a few years ago. He's a very solid backup. And maybe the Penguins can fix that problem with Domingue, a guy that's already in town, a guy that they don't need to give away any assets for. So it'll be interesting to see going forward what exactly the plan is, especially with your back-to-backs coming up tonight. We're recording this on Thursday, the 20th. They play the Senators tonight, and then the Columbus Blue Jackets on Friday night. So depending on what the status of Casey DeSmith is, depending on what the status of or what the plan for the Penguins is with Domingue, we'll wait and see. The taxi squad is there for another couple weeks at least. So he'll probably be hanging out in Pittsburgh. So what the Penguins have planned for him will hopefully kind of be laid out here in the next couple weeks. But getting back to the Sharks game, another game where the Penguins probably weren't the best team on the ice, but every once in a while you need your goaltender, whoever it is, to step up and steal one, and that's what he did, giving them just enough cushion for Jake Gensel to win it in overtime and get 2 points and kind of shrug off that Kings loss.
You're right, Robbie, and Domingue's performance is something that I think we'll be talking about a little bit later on in this episode, but I do agree with you. I think it's a development worth watching because, as you brought up, this could be an asset that you don't have to trade another team for. If Casey DeSmith continues to falter, and you obviously mentioned it, Domingue does have prior NHL experience, so it's not like you're bringing up a fresh-faced rookie into a backup role behind Tristan Jarry, the all-star, for his performances. So, yeah, it's definitely something that I am intrigued, at least. And look, backup goaltender, and we mentioned this last week, if backup goaltender is the biggest of your issues heading into a playoff run, I think you're doing pretty well for yourself. But, you know, you're going to need your backup goaltender. You can't have Tristan Jarry be playing 65, 70 games this season in anticipation of hopefully a very long Stanley Cup run. You can't have it. You're going to wear him out. It's going to happen. So, you know, obviously we're going to continue to monitor Domingue's performance. Like you said, he'll be affiliated with the taxi squad for at least the next couple of weeks. So I'm very intrigued after his stellar play in the one game he has played so far. He's possibly made Mike Sullivan have to make some very interesting decisions. So that's something we will obviously keep an eye on as we move forward. And we're going to move forward to the final game of the recap segment from January 17th, game that the Penguins played in bright and shiny Las Vegas against the Vegas Golden Knights. Boy, Robbie, I have no shame in telling you that after the first period of this game, I turned the game off and went to bed. I know you can call me a fake fan all you want, but it being a 10:30 start and the Penguins going down 3-0 in the first period, I was more than willing to catch some shut-eye. But I wake up in bewilderment to see that the Penguins claw their way back and win 5-3. So let's get this scoring out of the way. Chandler Stephenson gets his 11th goal of the season at the 3:43 mark of the first period. Vegas out to a 1-0 lead. Evgeny Dadonov gets his 10th goal of the season, and boom, Vegas is out to a 2-0 lead at the 12-12 mark of the first period. And 30 seconds before the horn expires on the power play, Nicholas Waugh gets his 8th goal of the campaign. Vegas, like I mentioned, goes out to a 3-0 lead before the first horn sounds. And Robbie, this game was highlighted by the return of one Jason Zucker, and we will be talking about him in greater detail momentarily. He gets his 5th goal of the season. He gets the Penguins on the board at the 6:56 mark of the second period on the power play. Vegas still holding on to a 2-goal lead. Teddy Bluger getting his 8th goal of the season at the 7:45 mark of the second period. Now, Pittsburgh starting to claw their way back, and you're thinking, well, maybe they have a chance here. That 3-goal lead that Vegas had in the first period doesn't seem so insurmountable now. As we go into the third period, Jason Zucker is credited with his 2nd goal of the game, his 6th of the season, just 28 seconds into the third period. Vegas and Pittsburgh are tied at 3 after an improbable start to the game for the Penguins. Jake Guentzel getting his 20th goal of the season already to give Pittsburgh a 4-3 lead, and Sidney Crosby would finish out the scoring, his 6th goal of the season at the 18:52 mark of the third period. Robbie, Pittsburgh wins this one by a score of 5-3. They score 5 unanswered goals against a very good Pacific Division leading Vegas Golden Knights team. The Penguins finish with 37 shots on goal. They win 46% of their faceoffs. However, they go 1-for-3 on the power play. They outhit Vegas 32-26 in this one. So, Robbie, Jason Zucker returns to the lineup. He's credited with 2 goals. Nice to see you're getting some more contributions from Jake Guentzel. He is not slowing down whatsoever. Sidney Crosby gets on the score sheet as well. I really like to see the resilience from the Penguins. To be quite honest with you, Robbie, knowing how good the Golden Knights have been this season in the Pacific Division, they go down 3-0, the Penguins do, by the end of the first period. I thought the goal that Waugh scored right before the buzzer was the backbreaker on the power play, but no, that wasn't the case. Whatever Mike Sullivan told his team in the first intermission must have worked, because, like I said, they score 5 straight goals to get a very convincing score on the score sheet. Nonetheless, 5-3 over Vegas. Robbie, I'll hand it over to you. Certainly a wild game, one of the more crazy games we've seen this season. So what are your thoughts from Penguins Golden Knights on January 17th?
Yeah, I can't blame you for calling an early night, because I did the same thing when it was a little out of hand there in the first period to when they went down 3-0. But I don't say it lightly, and it's a little cliche, but it's very easy to make a case that this is the best win of the year for the Penguins, because it wasn't just a 3-0 comeback. They did it by, dominating the game. When they went down 3-0, the Penguins were the better team on the ice for the remaining 45 minutes of that game. From about the last 5 minutes of the first period on, the Penguins dominated that hockey game, and every underlying number, all the analytics show that the Penguins really did deserve to win that game. And they did it against a very, very good Las Vegas team. I understand Vegas does have some guys out of the lineup, but that's not the Penguins' fault. The Penguins just went out there. It was at the end of a long road trip. They easily could have just gone into a shell and tried to get home after going down 3-0. They'd already, at worst, they were at 500 on this road trip. But they weren't going to let that be an excuse that they were tired or any of this stuff. They went out there and they dominated a very good Golden Knights team and won that game, came back and won that game, and did it in convincing fashion. Jari settled down and played very well after giving up the first three goals. Credit Mike Sullivan. He could have gone to Domingue or whatever he wanted to do when they went down 3-0, but he stuck to his guns. Jari, again, he didn't have any too difficult saves to make, but at the end of the day, he made the saves he had to, kept the Golden Knights off the board the rest of the way, and the Penguins offense did the rest. Jake Guentzel continues to be Jake Guentzel. Sidney Crosby continues to be Sidney Crosby. Just when this team's clicking like this, it's something to watch because the team just they're so good. And right now, a win like that, it really just kind of, and something we talked about the past couple of weeks, makes you start to get that feeling in your stomach again about what this team can do. And I understand it's only mid-January, a little after mid-January, long season to go, especially with not even at the halfway point yet, believe it or not. It feels like they've been playing hockey forever, but with all the cancellations, we're not even at the halfway point yet. But all of a sudden you see them, oh, hey, they were, after that win, they were third in the standings. They're within 3 points of the Rangers for second place. They're climbing closer to the Hurricanes. And they got games against all these teams yet, except Washington. I think they only have one. Man, they done. No, they have two left at Washington, I think, at home. But I don't think they've played the Hurricanes yet. I don't think they've played the Rangers yet. So you have these games where you're going to have a chance to kind of double your points in a 4-point, 6-point game, however you want to make it work, with the loser point in play. But all of a sudden, a game where the Penguins could have folded, could have gone home, got ready for Ottawa, and a big home streak coming up before the All-Star break. They didn't fold, played their butts off, dominated the Knights the rest of the way, and found a way to come back. And that just, it kind of makes you think that maybe this team, maybe they have that thing, that it factor that makes you believe a little bit more than maybe you did at the beginning of the season, or maybe since 2017 or 2018.
And how many times have I told you over the last couple of weeks on the podcast, Robbie, this team, it for the first time, like you said, since 2017-18, you know, I have that feeling that they sit at 23-10-5 with 50 good for 51 points right now, currently fourth in a very tight Metropolitan Division. But as you mentioned, they have all these games coming up against divisional opponents that they haven't even seen yet. So the second half of the season is going to be a knockdown, drag out kind of a brawl for the Penguins, and the rest of the Metropolitan Division is concerned. So that's definitely something that we're going to be keeping an eye on as well as we get into the thick of it after the All-Star break. And now that there's no Olympics, we're going to be playing a lot of hockey in a very short and condensed period of time. So buckle up, baby. And we're going to see. The Penguins have been impressive, but how impressive, how good can they be against the divisional foes to pick up points and make up ground in the division when they need to? And so with that, the recap segment comes to an end, Robbie. And this week, the main topic that I want to talk about this week is a little bit out there, and it's a little bit crazy, but seeing how recently, you know, I've looked at the mailbag tweets, and a lot of people, and rightly so, are interested in what the Penguins, what they should be doing by the trade deadline. Who should they be picking up, or who should they be trading away to make their team as tough as possible? And you know, I think it's because part of it is what we're also saying, what we also believe, is that this team, for the first time in a good while, looks like they have a legitimate chance to come out of the Eastern Conference and challenge and beat just about anybody. I mean, if they can rack off 5 straight goals against the Golden Knights, bing, bam, boom, and win 5-3, why can't they do that against one of their divisional foes like the Rangers or the Hurricanes? So, but this week, Robbie, I want to put a little bit of more hyper-focus into one player specifically. And that one player is Jason Zucker. We mentioned him in the Vegas recap. He returned after missing 7 games and was credited in that game with 2 goals. But looking at Jason Zucker as a whole, seeing that he's been out, and this isn't the first time he's dealt with injury and bad luck in a Penguins uniform, I think it's safe to say, at least in my opinion, that the Zucker experiment hasn't worked out with great success for the Penguins. And the left winger has 43 points in 84 games played. And you look at that kind of, you look at those kinds of numbers in what is supposed to be your second line left wing alongside of Evgeny Malkin. It's not eye-catching or eye-popping by any means. And you look at his contributions this season, he's played in 31 games and good for 6 goals, 7 assists, 13 points. Being that, Robbie, this isn't the regime that acquired Jason Zucker. Being that Evan Rodriguez is having a career year, and I know Rodriguez has bounced in and out of the lineup, and he's bounced all around and played several kinds of roles. Robbie, let's get crazy, and let's say Jason Zucker is involved in trade talks. And this is pure speculation on my part. There have been no rumors or anything to suggest that Jason Zucker is a candidate to be traded. But let's say Jason Zucker is involved in trade discussions for the Penguins. Like I said, this isn't the regime that acquired Jason Zucker. He hasn't really performed to the standard that I think a lot of people thought that he was going to when he was traded, acquired by Jim Rutherford. So, Robbie, I'll ask you, would you entertain a trade for Jason Zucker if any such discussions were to come up by the trade deadline? And would you hedge your bets on a guy like Evan Rodriguez cementing himself in the top six? Or would you rather keep Jason Zucker for depth purposes in case of injury through this season and potentially reevaluate in the offseason? Because Zucker does count for, I believe, $5.2 or $5.3 million against the salary cap. So, you know, there is the argument that you could shift out Zucker and free up a little bit of money to maybe address some other holes on the roster. But, Robbie, I know this question this week is a little bit out of left field, but being that everyone seems like they're in a trade deadline kind of mood, let's talk about one of the candidates that I think could qualify and meet the criteria for being shipped out. Let's talk about Jason Zucker here. So I'll hand it over to you, Robbie. What are your thoughts? What do you make of Jason Zucker's season so far? What do you make of his tenure in a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform? And would you entertain a trade if a trade were to come up, including Jason Zucker?
Well, before I do my full input on that, Jason Zucker and Louis Domingue have both been placed on injured reserve, so that's fun.
Is that breaking news? Did we just break some news?
Well, I didn't break it. I got it on Twitter. I don't have that kind of sources. but no, so as great as Jason Zucker looked against the Golden Knights, Jason Zucker is now on injured reserve, and apparently Domingue took a bump during the morning skate today and has also been placed on injured reserve. So you knew something like that was coming at some point. They couldn't all be healthy at the same time. Trading Jason Zucker, for me, not during the season, because as bad as the numbers look, and they're not great, I understand that, the process is there. And at some point, a guy like Zucker, he might not score 30 or 40. The puck's going to go start going in. He's too good of a player for the puck to stay out this much longer. So the Penguins, how they are right now, how they're built, Zucker just kind of fills, even if you knock him off the second line and put Rodriguez up there, I completely understand that. I have no problem with Rodriguez being as high up the lineup as possible. Zucker, he plays their system well. He has speed. He does shoot the puck a ton. Eventually, some of those are going to find the back of the net. And when it gets to playoff time, you need depth scoring as much as possible. He doesn't need to go out there and score 20 goals in a playoff run. He just needs to go out there, play his game, get the puck on net. And when the puck gets on net, good things tend to happen at some point. And for the Penguins, their offense has been just so bad in the playoffs the last couple times they've been there that you hope that they finally break through. They don't run into a Red Hawk goaltender. For goodness sakes, it does not look like the Islanders are going to make the playoffs this year, so we hopefully won't have to worry about them. So I keep Jason Zucker on my team because I think what he does brings such an important aspect into what the Penguins are trying to do. Again, the numbers aren't great. I understand that he has definitely not lived up to his contract in Pittsburgh or what the he was definitely not been worth what they traded away. But at this point, neither here nor there, I think you keep him. Now, the offseason, completely different story. Again, you like you mentioned, a different regime brought him in. He wasn't brought in by Burke or Hextall. So how they view him, we don't know. And we really won't know until, I mean, at least this trade deadline. And then in the offseason, I don't know whether they tried to move him last offseason or not. I think you could get decent value for him because guys like him that have a history of scoring 30 goals in the season don't just pop up on the trade block all that often, especially from a team like the Penguins, where maybe you work out a deal with another playoff team, maybe out west, and you kind of make a deal where it works for both teams and both teams get good assets for it. The Penguins, I think, if any trade they're going to make is going to be looking for an NHL-ready player. I don't think they're definitely not interested in trading away an NHL regular for picks or prospects or anything like that. They're going to want a guy ready to play in return because it's clear that they're a Stanley Cup contending team. But Zucker, I do not think I move him right now. Even though he can't stay healthy, at some point you might need him to be healthy because the way the Penguins go, you just know someone else is going to go out of the lineup. So as far as I'm concerned, you're keeping Zucker in Pittsburgh, and then we reevaluate as they should in the offseason, reevaluate everything because obviously you're – and we'll talk about it here in a little bit. I see the first question, but yeah, you reevaluate in the summer, but I just think that the way they get injured, he does provide something. You got to keep him in the lineup as much as possible and keep him into Pittsburgh throughout this season and playoff run.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that take, Robbie. And I don't personally believe that Jason Zucker is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. Even if you want to look at his possession numbers, in his roughly three seasons in Pittsburgh, I mean, he's a 55.5% Corsi 4 and a 55.6 Fenwick 4 percentage. Those are obviously very, very attractive possession numbers for a forward. Like you mentioned, he's a former 30-goal scorer in this league, and they obviously do not grow on trees. So I don't want to disparage or diminish Jason Zucker's contributions to the Penguins or throughout his professional career. Just throwing that as pure speculation, as being one of the candidates with a heftier contract, and obviously wondering if they would want to even shed his contract to, like you said, bring in another NHL-ready player, maybe a change of scenery kind of trade, since, you know, it really hasn't worked out for Zucker in Pittsburgh to this point. But Robbie, before you told me that the breaking news of Zucker going on injured reserve, I mean, I typed all this up last night before we knew Zucker was even going to go on injured reserve. So it's just crazy. The kind of luck that the Penguins have when it comes to that sort of thing. Zucker comes back for one game, scores two goals, gets the win, and immediately goes back on injured reserve. It's just the luck that this Pittsburgh Penguins team has. But
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's move into the mailbag segment here, and let's move into the mailbag segment. And like you brought up, Robbie, we have some salary cap and trade deadline questions in this week's mailbag. If you're a first-time listener or a long-time listener, and you're interested in contributing to the Pensburg Podcast mailbag, you can do so by following our Pensburg Podcast Twitter account. Every week, we will send out a mailbag tweet asking for your participation in this mailbag segment. We love getting all sorts of kinds of crazy questions from our listeners, and we have quite a few different questions this week. Like always, Robbie, you will get first crack at the mailbag this week. First question for you comes from Brendan, and he asks, he wants to know, assume $17 million goes to re-signing Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, a backup goaltender, and Chad Ruedel. Then $16 million is remaining to spend on Brian Rust, which is a free agent. Kasperi Kapanen, I believe, is a restricted free agent. Danton Heinen, I'm not sure of his restricted or unrestricted status. I know he signed a one-year deal. I'm not sure if he is restricted or unrestricted. Zach Aston-Reese, Evan Rodriguez, and Jeff Carter. Brendan basically wants to know, how do you divvy it all up and which one or two players could potentially be out? Keep in mind, moving Jason Zucker, who we brought up earlier, also frees up another $5.3 million to spend in the for the salary cap.
Yeah, so a lot of names mentioned here, so we'll try to go through it as easy as possible and as quickly as possible. So Malkin, Letang, I like them coming back. Be interesting to see exactly what the money will be, but I really think that they're both coming back. Backup goaltender, probably going to come cheap, whether it's re-signing Casey Smith or maybe Domingue, like we talked about, just performed admirably and they decided to bring him on full-time next year. And Ruedel, I see no reason they don't try to bring back Chad Ruedel, because Chad Ruedel, it does exactly what you expect Chad Ruedel to do, and he's not going to be expensive. He'll be 32 next season, but he's only costing $750,000 against the cap. So, again, not expensive, won't be expensive. And as long as he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to be fine, because he just does what he's supposed to do. The less you hear his name, the more you know he's doing exactly what the Penguins want him to do. So that brings us to all the pending free agents that Brendan mentioned here. Russ Kapanen, Zach Aston-Reese, Eric Rodriguez, and Jeff Carter. And then he also mentions moving Zuck, which we kind of just talked about. So, again, when the Penguins brass sits down this offseason to reevaluate, hopefully it's sometime in July with the Stanley Cup sitting beside them, obviously. They're going to have a lot of decisions to make. The interesting ones will be between Rodriguez and Russ, because I don't know if they can afford both of them. And right now, Russ looks so good when he's on the ice. I fear him not staying on the ice. But, man, it's really hard to not – but Rodriguez reminds me of the kind of guy that he has one hot year like this, and some team, like, bubble team just pays him a lot of money for, like, 4 or 5 years. So maybe Russ becomes, in the long term, more affordable. I don't know. I think that's a very interesting scenario. And when Russ was out and Rodriguez was playing out of his mind, I was like, oh, just keep Rodriguez – Russ can go get paid in free agency. But then Russ comes back and just doesn't stop scoring. You're like, son of a gun. Kapanen is an interesting piece because he is a restricted free agent. So there's a little different system going on there. He can have a qualifying offer. So a lot of that's going to depend on what they can get him for. Right now he's making $3.2 million against the cap. I just don't think he does enough to warrant much more than that. So it would not be shocking to me if he is not back in Pittsburgh. Then you get into Aston-Reese, who's just a defensive monster. He should be able to come back cheap. And then the very interesting piece of Jeff Carter, who just this week, when he made his return to LA, said that going to Pittsburgh extended his career. Does that mean it extended it through the rest of his contract or even beyond this contract? Because Jeff Carter, I think, loves Pittsburgh, and I think it's no question that Pittsburgh loves Jeff Carter. If you can get Jeff Carter to stay in Pittsburgh, he's making a very odd 2.64 against the salary cap. If you can get him for a good price on maybe a 1-year deal or 2-year deal, if he wants to stay in Pittsburgh, if he thinks that this team can win a cup or win another cup, whatever, if you can get him to stay in Pittsburgh, I think you do it, because he can clearly still play. If you just want to do a 1-year flyer, or you think he can get 2 more years out of him, I'd say Jeff Carter comes back to Pittsburgh, because the fans love him here. He loves being here, it seems like. And, I mean, he had nothing but praise when asked about what Pittsburgh has done for his career. So I think that you're going to have to make decisions. Oh, and Danton Heinen as well. I really love Heinen's game. He's not scoring to the level that's going to make him, like, break the bank, a team break the bank for him in the offseason. So, but if he gives you 20 goals, 20 goal scorers don't just fall off trees. So I think Danton Heinen could be in Pittsburgh again next year too. Your big decisions will be Rust, Erod, and I mean, what are you going to do with Kasperi Kapanen? And then the Jason Zucker question as well, which we talked about, trade him this offseason or figure out what to do there. Question number two comes from Joey Bag of Donuts. Do they need to trade anything to compete for a Stanley Cup?
Well, in short, I can answer Joey's question and probably say no with the roster they currently have. That's assuming everybody is in full health for a full Stanley Cup run. They probably wouldn't need to trade for anything. But, you know, we talked about it last week. I don't think you can ever have too many good defensemen for a playoff run. So acquiring a defenseman, I'm still in favor of. I really don't think the forward group needs to be touched for any real reason. Again, that is assuming everybody is full health for the remainder of this season. You know, nobody goes on LTIR. Nobody, you really, essentially, you can't have a major injury. Backup goaltender, we touched on last week as well. That would be another position that if Casey DeSmith doesn't work out. However, Louis Domingue's performance between this week and last week has raised some eyebrows, and we talked about that earlier on in this episode. So you maybe don't even have to address that situation if you don't want to, and give Domingue an opportunity again if Casey DeSmith continues to falter. So I'm not sure what's up Ron Hextall's sleeve at the moment. Whether he's even engaged in trade talks is another question entirely, that I don't know as well. But again, my thought process has always been you can never have too many good defensemen for a Stanley Cup playoff run. So that would be what I would probably trade for to help compete for a Stanley Cup. Question number three comes from Tony Nikkanen, and he replied to Joey's tweet. Joey Bag of Donuts, he replied to his tweet, and he says, "I'll continue from here. We know what the management has said, but here is what we need." And this is what Tony believes. A backup goalie and an upgrade over Zucker or Kapanen. Include one of those players in that trade. Maybe an extra defenseman. We should also be able to give up any prospect. What are your guys' take on these suggestions?
Well, the good news is the Penguins don't really have any prospects to give up. Yeah, the cupboard is, we've talked about, barren there. So you're going to be looking more at draft picks, which, listen, the Penguins, we know they're going to be picking probably at best like 20th this year. Dude, just, yeah, get rid of your first-round picks if that's what it takes to make a deal. Backup goalie, I don't really think trading Zucker or Kapanen is necessary for a backup goalie. Again, maybe Dominguez is the answer there. An extra D, I think they would probably go with Pierre-Olivier Joseph before breaking the bank for an extra defenseman. It depends on what you want that extra defenseman to do. We should be able to give up any prospect, absolutely. I think if you look at the list of prospects, there's probably a few that are on the "we're not going to trade this guy" list, but that list is very short. Zucker, Kapanen, I just don't think that either are going to get traded. I don't think, again, with the Penguins' injuries and what those two guys bring to the game, they're both fast. They both do like to shoot. I know the numbers aren't there, but they still provide. They're not complete anchors. The contracts aren't perfect, but at this point, you worry about the contracts in the offseason, because I just think when the Penguins are fully stacked, that includes Jason Zucker and Kasperi Kapanen, they're a very hard team to beat. And those guys do bring something to the team. They're not just dead weight. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I understand the contract's not perfect, but I think that's a problem you worry about in the offseason. And what we've talked about in the past, like, what do they need? We've talked about backup goaltender. We've talked about maybe some defensive depth. And, yeah, I mean, Ron Hextall and Brian Burke are probably going to search the market for that. But at the same time, they're in a position now where they don't necessarily need to break the bank for a big name player. Now, if I'm trying to think of a name that could possibly become available that would be worth trading a first-round pick for, like, if you have the opportunity to go out there and get from a team that's out of the playoffs a very, very top-end player, then the conversation changes. You find room in your lineup for a guy like that, but unless that becomes available, that's all hypothetical. So, I mean, overall, we've kind of discussed what they need. I don't think they're going to give up much unless that big time name comes available. They just can't say no to for the right price. So that's where I kind of sit on that. And the last question number four, comes from Brendan again, with no deadline moves. So I guess that means they just completely stay pat. What final result would you consider a success for this roster? Stanley Cup, conference final, round two, or round one?
My pessimism is showing in that. Let's get through round one first before we jump on any sort of crazy celebratory bandwagon or anything like that. The Penguins have struggled mightily in recent years and at least trying to get out of round one. But to be a bit more serious here and answer the question with a bit more seriousness, I think every year, to be quite honest with you, every year it's Stanley Cup or bust as long as this roster is intact the way it is and as long as you have Crosby and Malkin and Letang playing at a high level. History dictates, logic dictates, the odds dictate that it's obviously incredibly hard to win a Stanley Cup. You need a lot of bounces, a lot of puck luck, a lot of luck from the health aspect to go your way. So, you know, saying every year it's Stanley Cup or bust kind of paints a season with unrealistic expectations if they don't win a Stanley Cup. To be honest with you, the Penguins for the rest of the Crosby Malkin era are playing with house money after what they accomplished in 16 and 17. So if they do manage to squeeze one more championship out, that'll just be the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake, as far as I'm concerned. But for the average fan, it would probably consider Stanley Cup or bust because Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are still here and still playing at a relatively high level despite them being on the downswing of their career. So Stanley Cup or bust probably for the average fan. For me, I think my expectations are tempered just a little bit more, maybe grounded in reality a little bit more than your average diehard Pittsburgh Penguins fan. But that's just me. That's just who I am. So that's probably what I would consider a success. I'll just say Stanley Cup or bust for the average fan. But that will do it. That wraps up the mailbag. And Robbie, that wraps up another episode of the Pensburg podcast. So for Robbie Noggle, I have been Garrett Behanna. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of the Pensburg podcast. And we will catch you all again next week.